Are you ready for the ultimate coding challenge? Stand a chance to win a Tesla Cybertruck or $100,000? All you have to do is build an app with a front end and back end and deploy it on WSO2's Corio, an internal developer platform. The more you do with Corio, the more chances you have to win. For all the details, go to corio.dev/cybertruck. Sign up, get started, and possibly win a Tesla Cybertruck or $100,000. Plus, 10 more winners get MacBook Pros. But hurry, because the challenge ends on April 30th. Good luck.
Cloudcast Media presents, from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina, this is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to the Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it is Aaron for a quick intro this week. First, welcome everyone, and I'll have to admit, I have a slight case of travel envy, I'll call it this week. This week is both KubeCon, CloudNativeCon EU in Paris, as well as NVIDIA GTC in San Jose, California. I kind of wish I was at one or both of them, but I also admit I'm a little torn because I just don't enjoy traveling post-COVID nearly as much. And so what are your thoughts on that? I'd love to hear about them. While we're talking about spring conference season, one quick note though, I will be at both my company's event, Nutanix.next in Barcelona, and also at Red Hat Summit in Denver, Colorado. I will be speaking at both events, and if you're around, please find me and say hello. With that, let's move on to our topic for this week. Today, we are talking about building an AI product company with Fireflies.ai. So we've been both fans of the product, as well as we know a number of others that use Fireflies AI. And we wanted to get Krish, the CEO and founder, on to talk about what it's like to build both a product and a company, both before and after LLMs came onto the scene. So we hope you enjoy the topic and the conversation, and we'll get started right after this. And we're back and have a really good topic for this week. And we've been trying to figure out, because Fireflies AI, which is going to be the company and end topic all kind of wrapped in one, how do we talk about a product and something in the AI space, but also talk about a little bit of infrastructure and artificial intelligence behind the scenes and how these things were built? And so we have a fantastic opportunity here to talk to Krish. Krish is CEO and founder of Fireflies AI. So first of all, Krish, welcome to the show.
Hi, Aaron. It's great to be here.
Yes, absolutely. So welcome to the show. And before we dive into the discussion, tell everyone a little bit about your background, please.
Yeah, so a little bit about myself and our company. I'm Krish Ramanini, co-founder and CEO at Fireflies AI. We build AI that joins your meetings. It takes notes. It helps you stay present and so that you don't have to do all the busy work afterwards. And we've been doing this for almost, well, we launched in 2020, but we've been working on this for a few years before that. Fireflies today has taken notes for over 10 million people across 200,000 organizations, 70% of Fortune 500. There's people out there using Fireflies. And it's been a roller coaster of a journey in terms of building AI before all of this LLMs and GPT stuff came out to where it is today.
Yeah. And actually, that was something I wanted to talk to you a little bit about is, you know, we kind of have a running joke of like it's pre OpenAI and post OpenAI at times, as far as like mindset and what people think about with all of this. And to give you a little bit of background, Krish, our listeners, they tend to be interested and maybe employed in the enterprise AI space or enterprise infrastructure. And some folks may find it a little surprising that we're talking to you today. So what I really wanted to do was dig into how an up-and-coming AI company really provides value at scale from individuals all the way up to large enterprises, because you're really kind of covering the gamut here. So what goes into building a product as well as the product go-to-market? Maybe let's start there. How did you start thinking about this?
Well, When building for a new category, you need to reduce as much friction as possible. And when we had started building Fireflies, at the time, this sort of technology didn't exist. And many people didn't think it was feasible. And we had to start with what was the end result that we wanted in mind. The idea that people can continue doing what they're already doing. They have an assistant that follows them around and helps them be productive and get work done. So that's where the starting point really was with the journey. And we wanted to be plugged into your workflows, whether it's your Zoom calls or your Google Meet calls, to being able to automatically put those notes into the places where you already work, send the notes to Slack or send the notes into Salesforce. So that was a behavior, a human behavior that we had identified that people do every single day. It's monotonous. It's very, very tiring. And so we started with that. And now you have to go back and say, well, how do you make this technology work to build for that ideal experience? And that's the tricky part, because it's not easy. And to do it at scale, it's one thing doing it for 10 people or 100 customers, but doing it for millions of people, there are so many challenges along the way. If we had known what we had known along the journey, maybe we would have been discouraged to even start in the first place. So I think there is some bliss in ignorance when you are young founders in your 20s starting this out. And then fast forward to today, a lot of the things that we thought would take a few years continue to accelerate. And we got to be able to do it a lot sooner thanks to the breakthroughs in AI, thanks to the improvements in speech recognition, thanks to large language models actually understanding a conversation and making sense of the notes that were generated. So a lot of things got fast forwarded by almost 5 years from our roadmap as a result of that. And that is partly being at the right place at the right time, but also continuing to chip away at the problem. And we would have continued to do so anyway, even if the LLMs weren't there, but it significantly made our life a lot easier and helped us have the power of like 10 PhDs in a simple API call.
Yeah, yeah. And let's talk about those foundational models and kind of that industry leap, because I think it is really interesting, because your company, obviously you were working on products for years before the foundational models were kind of released and LLMs became a thing. And so I see it both as a blessing and potentially a curse, because the entire industry, like you said, is moving extremely fast, extremely accelerated, but also the competitiveness is also maybe greatly enhanced, right? Because a lot of these foundational models, they're going multimodal. And so do you ever worry I'll use the term, the generic use LLMs, if you will, that they're not specialized or trained on something, might push and compete with more specialized models?
So I'm always a believer in using state-of-the-art. So if that's OpenAI, if it's Claude from Anthropic, or if it's someone else, always be looking at what is the best out there and working with them. So OpenAI's investors also happen to be investors in Fireflies. And as a result, we've been able to build a close partnership with them well before the launch of these LLMs and GPTs. And I think as an application provider, what we are focused more on is the use case, the workflow, and the end experience. And yes, if you want to go raise $1 billion and go build your own foundation model, sure. Could you say that like open source is going to reduce some of that barrier to entry as well? So I'm not opposed to open source either. I would love to adapt and use open source. But what we're seeing is what's historically been very expensive is going to become more and more commoditized over time. That's great for us building this sort of technology, because we can use multiple providers and we can see what fine-tuned model works well in one situation versus a general model versus a cheaper model versus a faster model. So there's so many options, and it's only been about 15 months and you have this proliferation of LLM models. What I think that also means is for application developers like us, you are going to see the barrier to entry go down. What was the barrier maybe 4 years ago versus now? The barrier is a lot easier to start doing this, because now everyone sees that it's viable. When there's a gold rush, the people that come after the fact are trying to make something happen. Whereas if you were already there, living there, working there, and then you realize, hey, you could, you know, just right across the street, there's like a gold rush happening and you can go jump in. That's different. So for us, in our case, we've already built like this, like 4 years worth of execution muscle and really building in a place where we were trained when the landscape was much more difficult. The terrain was a lot more difficult and it makes it easier for us, right? There's always a saying that your practice should be harder than your match. And for us, those last 4 years were like that. And now what you also see is the expectation from the consumer, the expectation from the end user is way higher, right? In terms of how good the transcripts are, how good the notes are. And so when people enter this market, when we started, it was all about like, oh, can they actually even transcribe something and reliably? And to now it's like, wait, I want human level summaries. I want it customized to the way that I want to take notes. And you have to constantly keep adapting. And that is why, like, you know, when you make these leapfrog jumps from GPT-3 to 3.5 to 4, and then, you know, down the road, more models, increased context windows, you are going to see a rapid set of innovation. When we started, there was probably a 2-year period where there was not that much of a technological change. Now, every 6 weeks, there's a new model, a new update, and you have to keep pace. So I think it's more of an execution risk rather than being able to go and say, I need to go build my own foundation model from scratch. I think at the application level, I would actually disagree with that statement. If someone says, okay, I want to go build a Firefly's competitor, now go give us like $500 million to go build our own foundation model for meetings. I don't know if that strategy will necessarily work at scale, because ultimately these models are going to get smarter. You may not even need fine tuning. And second, the cost of intelligence is going to go down. So if you hyper optimize around a certain world order that exists today, it may become irrelevant in 6 months.
Yeah, that's such a fantastic view. And it's interesting too, because there's so many layers here. There is, to think about it from a developer standpoint, because as you put out, a developer standpoint, from an infrastructure standpoint, if you want to do your own, like you got to worry about the GPUs and you got to worry about the open source models and you got to worry about every layer in the stack, or you can just call an API. Right? Like you're going from one end of the extreme to the other end of the extreme. So there's like the developer mindset of all of this. But at the end of the day, what you're trying to provide is a complete abstraction away from all of that technology. For your users, it shouldn't matter. Like everything we just talked about shouldn't matter to your users. They shouldn't care if you're using GPT or Anthropic or your own. And so tell everyone a little bit more about, like, when you're thinking about this, like, how do you go from, on one hand, having a conversation and building technology around the latest model, and at the same time, making it invisible to the end user?
We hear the words copilot, agents a lot. And back when we started, playing around with this technology, it was as far as 2016, there was this idea of chatbots. But to be honest, chatbots at the time were not very intelligent. They actually hindered the overall experience. And then people went back to the, like, websites and dashboards and said, okay, no more bots. It's not really like doing the job it's supposed to. Now you flip the switch in this day and age, these bots can do a lot of powerful things in the background. And that was actually the thesis behind Fireflies, is that it should be your teammate, a bot that follows you around and does work for you. So in a very similar fashion, we are creating that sort of experience where what should Fireflies do if it was a good teammate, if it was a good secretary or chief of staff? And a lot of the end user experience is really around, how do I get value out of my meetings? How do I know what's going on? I don't want to sit and review a bunch of these conversations. So I want to do really easy knowledge retrieval where I can just ask it a question. And we have this feature called Ask Fred, where you just ask any question about something that happened on a meeting and it'll retrieve that knowledge for you specifically and precisely. So these sort of things are more you giving this human-like feeling to the systems. And so I don't like to think about it almost like as like a dashboard and buttons anymore, but if I had a smart assistant that's supposed to go do work and then come back to me with the relevant information that I care about, that's the magic. So you're not only abstracting away the model stuff, but I think you're also abstracting away the historical, traditional sense of user experience, right? The conversational experience is what's going to matter. And ideally, the common modem of interaction is just going to be a conversation with one of these bots, and it's going to be able to do complex things for you. Because what we say in terms of a command versus how that translates to clicks on a screen or actions that we have to take, some stuff is lost in translation. And even like the most basic level of expertise in using these systems, these dashboards and stuff, is going to continue to get abstracted away, right? In the past, when you wanted to use a computer, you had to use a command line to navigate. And then you had the GUI, the graphical user interface, which allowed you to click and stuff and give visual inputs. Now we're doing the same thing with these bots, that where I can have it do a sequence of commands and chain those actions like an agent and then do those things for me. So for example, if I want Fireflies to send me a reminder before our follow-up meeting next month and to focus on certain things and give me up-to-dates or like a quick digest every month on who I've been talking to, who I need to keep in touch with, now I'm giving it the personalities of what a assistant would be, rather than me going to the dashboard every day and then trying to filter or go do some like pivot and pull some insights up, right? So I love this concept, and I love to dig deeper into this, is about you're abstracting away not just the underlying infrastructure technology, but also the overall user experience. It should just be like a simple command, and then I get what I see what I want in front of me.
I love that. I love that. Thank you. And Chris, another thing that had me thinking when you were thinking about all of this is kind of adoption. You know, our listeners probably remember the super early days of cloud, and you know, folks would just pull out a credit card and go use cloud. And sometimes the IT departments didn't even know about it, right? You had shadow IT, and then you, with the rise of AI, you almost had shadow AI at times. And so how do you, when you're building the product, think about individuals pulling out their credit card versus trying to target the enterprise for a customer, right? Very, very different mindsets in when you're building the products.
Product-led growth eventually has to turn into product-led sales. It can be organic, where you have a bunch of people using the product, and then that translates into the organization becoming interested and saying, hey, I want to get this for my entire company. How do I do that? So it may start with people swiping their credit card and starting to use Fireflies, to then their department manager saying, how can I bring Fireflies to everyone? And what are the capabilities of Fireflies at organization level? And I always like to say Fireflies is great single player mode, but it's even better in multiplayer mode. Because when you have more people using Fireflies, there's more knowledge being captured, and then you have more insights and more actionable things you can do based on that system. So in that regard, it's really about how do you deliver value, like compounding value over time. And we'd love to like land and expand very much like some of the best PLG companies. The core atomic use case for Fireflies around note-taking actually amplifies into something more. It becomes an organization's knowledge base. It becomes a place where you can create tons and tons of repository of information that you can go back to. And that's where organizations see, wow, I'm seeing more and more of my team not even use the CRM or the recruiting system. They're just going directly back into Fireflies and pulling that knowledge out. So I can see how this would save us tons of time. It helps us not have redundant meetings, make sure that we have contacts across different orgs, especially if you're in a remote setting and people don't know what's going on. It helps keep everyone on the same page. So for us, we have to go and show that level of enterprise value, and then that translates to enterprise level deals. But for us, it's always been about focusing on the individual, making sure the individual has a wonderful experience, and then building for the team, so that they can use it in a really strong way. And then you build for the department and then the organization. In some ways, as we've grown as an organization, the way we use Fireflies has also changed. So it gives us a lot of inputs into how large organizations think and how we need to build for them.
Yeah. And That naturally leads into the question then around security and compliance with IT departments, right? I've spoken to many customers, even pre-AI. You know, this is always an issue with, you know, SaaS-based services, but it is especially so with AI and AI tools. You know, we see a lot of IT departments just outright banning, you know, anything that sounds like an AI product because they're not sure how it's, you know, what's going to happen to the data and is the data potentially going to be used to train the next model or is it going to get out there somehow? And so how do you, as you're building out Fireflies, think about that and kind of navigate those things? And then, you know, kind of a quick follow-up, how does like environmental or governmental things like GDPR, for instance, play into something like that as well?
Yeah. I'll give a funny example and a real example from last week. I was at a investor summit. I was talking there and I got to meet with an investor from a sovereign fund. And these people are pretty influential folks, right? They're managing the capital of an entire country. And they're like, hey, we're very interested in what you guys are doing at Fireflies. I myself am super excited and I would love to see if there's an opportunity to invest and work with you guys. Now, what's interesting is that same investment fund that invests in AI technologies in their own office, they're not allowed to use any of the AI tools because of security concerns. And they have to go through a whole hierarchy of people before they can get access to something, right? So if the investors that are investing in the technology themselves have, you know, hesitations or they need to be educated on what they need to do and what they don't want to do with the platform, that's a great window into what the world looks like here, right? So one of the things is I've spent a lot of time talking to CIOs, CSOs, and basically folks at very high levels inside organizations. And anytime Fireflies is being used and then they want to scale it up to a large org, usually we'll go up to them, right? To that team to sign off on it. And we put certain guardrails in place that have proven to be very valuable and very CIO, CSO friendly. One of that is we will not train on your data by default. So we will not train on your data by default was like music to their ears. And most other AI companies are not doing that. Second, we have a special contract in place with OpenAI that says that they cannot retain or store any of that data. There's a 0-day data retention policy with OpenAI. Now, if you're using a small AI tool from an unknown provider, you don't know what they're doing with your data, and you don't know what data they're sending to other LLM providers and what those LLMs are doing with your data, right? So you basically knocked off two of the biggest risks by telling them we're not training on your data by default. And then the third piece that was really instrumental was, look, your data is so important to you. You own it, and we will give you a private cloud offering so that you can run this data and store it in your own system. And it doesn't even have to like be stored in a Fireflies repository or in our cloud. And that is, again, game-changing in this space where most people are not thinking, you know, five steps ahead. So all of a sudden, they're like, okay, we get to hold on to our data. Our data is not being trained on, and it's not being mixed up with some general LLMs. And in the event I do want some sort of fine-tuning improvement and stuff, Fireflies will come do it in our own instance where they will not make that data get mixed with some other data from other people, right? So that level of care and attention to an enterprise is what they want to hear. And that's what builds confidence. And we continue to work with these sort of folks around that. Because at the end of the day, the benefits of AI can only be truly enjoyed when people can use it in a way where they know that it's still safe and that it's still secure. So we have a lot of work to do there, and we still continue to do a lot of work in that area. But to build the most secure AI note taker and the most secure AI conversation platform, we have to make sure that we give as much control to the end users and the organizations and their CIOs as much as possible.
Fantastic. And I think that's a really great place for us to stop. That was a great summary of everything. Chris, certainly, thank you very much for your time today. And if everyone out there, if they're not already familiar with Fireflies, where can they go to get started and learn more, first of all?
Yeah, well, Fireflies.ai is where you would go, and you can sign up for free and get started and have Fireflies take notes for you on meetings. You can also follow me on LinkedIn, Krish Ramanini, and we tend to share some interesting insights and updates on the AI space. We're also launching a new community for folks that are interested in AI in the workplace and AI workflows. So we would love to get that out there soon. But we are just really passionate about building AI that makes our day-to-day work as a knowledge worker more and more productive. And I think there's just a huge community of people that are also very passionate about this stuff. And we would love to share more, not just about Fireflies, but other tools and technologies that you can use to really enter that future of work that everyone's been talking about for the last decade.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And so I'm going to wrap us up there. So on behalf of Brian, who wasn't able to make it this week, thank you everyone out there for listening. And certainly, if you enjoy the podcast, please tell a friend, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. And for that, I'm going to wrap us up for this week, and we will talk to everyone next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.